Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities in London. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. Walking Stories is described as an audio walk, but it's much more than just a walk in which one wears headphones. In all, it includes performance, observation, thoughtfulness, play, and interaction with fellow participants and the surroundings in which you find yourself in. I caught up with Charlotte Spencer and two of the multidisciplinary artists involved in devising and producing this extraordinary piece of immersive performance. We met in Greenwich Park days before they put on Walking Stories and before I was able to sign up to take part myself. The ambient noise of aircraft, helicopters, parakeets, and children playing is intrusive in parts of the interview. However, it strangely echoes the way in which these artists have interwoven a soundscape of current and pre-recorded sounds within Walking Stories itself. Part scripted with directional instructions, the genius of Walking Stories is the way in which it allows participants to follow their own course whilst all listening to the same soundtrack. I'm sitting in Greenwich Park and I'm with three people who are about to put on a walking audio performance. So perhaps you'd like to tell us a little bit about who you are and how you came together.
I'm Charlotte and I conceived of this project and have directed it. And tomorrow and on Saturday in Greenwich Park there's going to be a series of showings of this piece that we've made called Walking Stories. It's an hour length audio walk that's designed for up to 20 people to do together, and it lasts for about an hour. And one of the things that I find really interesting about it, or is very particular about it, is that that the people do it together. So they the MP3 players that we give them and the headphones are all synced simultaneously. So what they're hearing happens at the same time. They don't, lots of audio walks that I've come across, you go and do it on your own. It's very specific to the site often. And with this one, it's contingent on doing it with other people. And that's a really important aspect of how we've made it, and stands it aside a little bit. Also because the walk is designed to be able to happen in any park, so not specific to Greenwich Park, although we have tailored moments of it to that. And so there's something interesting for me about sort of the mobility of this project that can move between many green spaces anywhere, really, and seeing how different it is, or it exists in different kinds of spaces.
Who's been involved in the making?
It's been quite a changing core of a group of people, but the core was five artists working on the project. Two sound artists, me and another dance maker, and a filmmaker, and Jennifer, who works in dance, is here, and David, who's been working on the film, is here. And then there's been a kind of looser pool of probably four or five other artists who've been contributing to the work as we've been making it, and some of them quite substantially so.
David, do you want to give us a little taste of what the film is going to be about?
It's a good question, because we're in the throes of putting that together at the moment. So I joined the project in response to an invitation that Charlotte had put out in the sort of dance community and filmmaking community, and connected straight away with lots of the things that it involved, which are passions of mine: cycling, being outdoors, walking, obviously dance. I have a background in dance. I was a dancer for 15 years and a dance maker. So there are lots and lots of strands to it that I was really fascinated by, and when I met Charlotte we talked a lot about some of those kind of passions that we shared quite clearly and connected with, and ways that maybe making a film might be affected by the way this project has been conceived. For me it's been really about allowing the project to redirect the way that I think about making films. The project by you know, as Charlotte said already, you know, involves a community of artists and creative people from very different backgrounds. And because of that, I think there's a sort of redirection of everyone's approach to their discipline and how they engage with not just each other, but with the way that they work within their medium. So in terms of filmmaking, it's a lot of the conditions that have surrounded the project, which are quite profoundly important to the project, have been acknowledged in the way that we've all started to work within our skill sets and within our sort of, you know, practices and approaches. That's been hugely challenging, but it's also been really fascinating. And I think the film, the question you asked was, you know, what can we expect from this film? The nature of a documentary is that it reveals itself through the footage. We're in the process at the moment of unpacking that footage and starting to see what happened. And that's really something that I think is fundamental about the walk. It's about an experience, and it's about witnessing, and it's about noticing. And less about scripting and less about that satisfying of an audience or giving to an audience. So in some ways the film at the moment is very loose, and it has lots of strands that are starting to hopefully weave into some kind of coherent pattern. What the film is, I hope, is going to be actually something that I'm not familiar with, and something that's as surprising to me, which it feels at the moment to be, as it will be to other people.
Okay, so the project itself, it's been quite a journey anyway, and the journey has been linked by cycling between different residences or different festivals or just different places where you've chosen to perform.
The first thing that I did when I conceived of this project was to devise a process, a creative process or a structure for something to happen. And at that point, I didn't really know what I wanted to make. I felt like I wanted to have a process that was a group of artists that have a series of residencies, artistic residencies in different places, and that we travel together by bicycle. And in that travelling, we build a stronger community, that we remain closer to the ground in our travelling, because I knew that I wanted what I made to be somehow coming from the outdoors and coming from the places that we pass through, and in remaining there physically, that would support it. And I was interested to see what that would do to the work that we made.
So Jennifer, tell us a little bit, how much have you been involved, and you know, what's your experiences so far?
So I've been quite sort of heavily involved in sort of devising the script, maybe providing a little bit of conceptual glue between, because there are quite a few different voices that we're feeding into.
Have you seen a progression in the work itself? Because what I understand is,
yes,
that the work has changed each time it's been, at each residency it's changed,
yeah,
a little bit, and then when it's been, how do we say, performed?
Yeah.
But it's actually performed by the people who take part. But
yeah.
So yeah. You've seen that progression, have you?
Yeah, I believe so. Again, from a very particular perspective, I think that for me, and possibly also for everyone else, one of the most interesting parts of this project has been a little bit what David was alluding to, that it has sort of stretched people out of their normal modes of operation or modes of approaching their skill set or employing their skill set, which I think is hugely important. And one thing that I definitely registered from afar was how stretched people were feeling. And then, yeah, seeing that reflected a little bit in sort of the scripts that I got back by email for checking and sort of feeding into. I haven't actually listened to the final finished draft, so tomorrow will be the first time that I...
Let's go back to what's actually going to happen, because
yeah,
I've bought my tickets and I'm going to turn up at 4 o'clock on Saturday, but I'm actually going to be about in the sixth or seventh cohort who's been involved, because you're running it in what, three or four performances tomorrow and similar number on Saturday, is that right?
Two on Friday and four on Saturday, yeah.
Okay, so you're
not going to give the game away too much, because there's obviously going to be very immersive and exciting when I'm doing it, but perhaps you might be able to give me a hint of, you know, I'm going to turn up and someone's going to give me a set of headphones, and I'm going to look at these other people that I've never met before who also have headphones. What happens next? What happens next?
You will hear combinations of Tristan's voice talking to you and sound, some of which will be very much feel like putting on your iPod and it's music, and others will be field recordings or mixtures of sounds that maybe you don't know what they are or where they're from. And that combination of audio experience will give you also a combination of physical experiences. So some of what Tristan says to you will be quite direct instruction about what to do and where to go, walk straight, follow the path, that kind of thing, which is pretty straightforward to understand and respond to. Other things will be more like activities that you share with the other people that you are sharing the walk with.
Is every headphone numbered? So should I avoid number 7? Because they always get the worst things to do. Or is it, you know, how's it set up? Can you tell us some clues?
I don't know how much I want to tell you about.
Yeah? Oh, maybe not then.
Yeah. I think that's safe to say there are some systems in place that give us like this much, like a tiny amount of control. But not very much.
And that's something that's like hugely fascinating and quite scary in a way, is that when we hand these over to you, actually we give over a huge amount of our control to you about what happens, and every set of audience that has done it so far handles what they hear differently. Depending on the combination of people and characters in the group, it will be different, and you end up in different places and maybe in different sorts of interactions or relationships with each other. The first sort of half is quite a bit more directed, and the second half is looser. So gradually, as the piece goes on, the people that do it have more and more agency about where they go or how they interact with what they're listening to. There's some moments where definitely you are invited to be with yourself, and other moments where you're invited to be with the group. It's really, really interesting to see the negotiation that happens in terms of the community that is getting built, because immediately you see that starting to play out. Is there a rebellious person in the group who doesn't want to do what they're being told? Are there a couple of natural leaders who go, let's go this way? That changes the flavour of how things are, and that's really fascinating for us. And
I mean, could this be done? I know you mentioned that obviously the site itself has some input into it, but I mean, could this be done in a warehouse or a garage?
Be done in a shopping centre. I mean, there are things which are made specific about kind of being outdoors, but that's not to say that they wouldn't make sense even if you're in an indoors environment, because you could imagine it, and the text moves between poetry and kind of reality quite fluidly and quite constantly, actually. And so in that way, I think if you were in a warehouse, you would engage with information that's about the ground just in a different way. And we were really keen not to be too prescriptive about what people chose to get interested in the space that they're in. So there's at no point is there like, go and sit under the tree or connect with the tree or anything like that. It's more about where your interest lies. So there might be something about going to a place that interests you or looking for something that interests you, and that could apply to anywhere.
Walking stories, is that something that can appeal to of any age, or is it, you know, a very adult experience, or are you allowing children to be involved in it?
I think it's not necessary to answer those questions in the doing of it. I think they've sort in a way been answered in the making of it, and I think that, you know, the duration of that making process and the amount of, as we've sort of already said, people and voices and disciplines that have made a contribution to it mean that it has a sort of an openness. You know, the idea of, you know, of this small, maybe quite short-lived community that happens is really, I think, the most interesting thing about it. It's the thing that allows people to make choices based on their own taste or temperament or mood or manner.
And that includes their age and their fitness.
Their age, their fitness, their state of mind that hour.
I was going to say, how bold do all these people have to be? I mean, you have to be quite bold to sign up.
The challenge is the boldness to sign up, not the boldness to do it. And so, I mean, for me, that's the challenge in getting people to come, because actually I think it's very unscary.
What's the kind of reaction you've had from people who've done it? You know, what's the feedback been?
I filmed a lot of feedback in Bristol. The feedback was generally that people have been really profoundly moved. And what was really interesting was that they'd all connected really, really deep, significant personal experiences through the walk. It is an invitation to sort of open the lid or open the door on your own fascinations or concerns or just things that probably lurk in the back of your mind or have been present, but, you know, being outdoors and being given that, to some extent, a challenge to be with other people or to be separate or to lead or to follow or to find your place in this, you know, little landscape that's being created for you is really powerful, and it does really move people. And I think it's about, you know, that whole thing about bravery or the courage to do it. I think if people do make that tiny first step, the other steps start to quicken and people start to really, you know, personally, when I did it, even with the insight of being involved in the project, was massively shocked and surprised in a really pleasant way about the kind of time I'd spent thinking about and contemplating my life.
Is any one of the people who are the makers, you know, do they take part in the performance, or is the performance strictly 20 people who sign up on the day, or, you know, book ahead or whatever?
I don't know how honest to be about it. Well, it's designed.
There's a mystery shopper in there,
well,
is there?
Ideally not.
No.
Yeah, ideally not. And we've kind of toyed back and forwards with whether we have a plant or whether we don't have a plant. And the group feels a little bit differently about it from their own different perspectives. I don't know, it's quite subtle, but if there's somebody in the group who probably the rest of the group don't know has been involved in any way, that is there and just has, there's one or two moments where if there's someone that has the confidence just to make a clear choice, then the next things unfold in a way that people really enjoy. And if those moments get missed, which is really easy for them to be missed by just a split second of either not quite hearing something or someone not quite having the confidence to go, oh yeah, that's what we need to do, then a whole portion of the work might not happen, which isn't necessarily a problem, because often people still have a very nice time. But I think when in occasions when then they've had the opportunity to do it again, and they do those things, they've really enjoyed, it's changed it for them for the better. And so there's a question in my head about whether there's a way of just having somebody who's not even necessarily somebody that made the work, but somebody that has some has had some involvement or some understanding that can do that role somehow. But it's a question, it's definitely a question for me about whether how much we give it over and just be okay with that, and totally also okay with, like, okay, they just didn't do any of that, well, okay, fine, and that's okay. Like, there's a question that we've been having since the beginning, actually, because in Caen, when we were there, we had it was our first sharing. We had to do it in French, so we had the first sort of third of the walk in French, which was just insane, really, to try and make that happen. And we were on a very particular site, but it was fascinating because no one followed any of the instructions. And that was our first sharing. So, you know, an instruction that's walk straight, follow the path, and they just turn their heads around and wander off. And I'm kind of going, does that matter or not matter? How much do I care? Why, if that doesn't matter, then why are we spending so much time meticulously designing this piece so that these interactions happen and exist? And very quickly, if none of the instructions are followed, the words that they hear become a fantasy or a series of stories, which I think are interesting, but it has a very different tone. So we've worked on the text quite a lot since then to try and make it so that things that are really important to us, that they happen, that they are set up in a way that is most likely that they do happen, or that they do get heard, or information is repeated, or the first five words doesn't matter if no one hears it, because actually that's what we realise at the beginning of a piece of text after a long period of music. People probably don't catch the first bit, so if the important thing is a bit later, then you're more likely to grasp them, or you can reassure people.
Yeah, I must say it sounds really fascinating, because you can't really pigeonhole it as any one type of it's not film and it's not soundscape, it's described in the literature, it almost detracts from it by saying it's an audio experience. I mean, it is an audio experience, but it's so much more.
It's so much more, yeah. And it's, and you know, one of the premises for me, if we come back to the thing about walking, was one of the first seeds of this project came from a walk that I did into the mountains in outside Grenoble. Jennifer and I had been there 2 years ago working. And on the last day, I went for a walk from the city centre into the mountains, which you can do there, which is amazing. And as I was walking, after a few hours, I realised how important walking is for me in my thinking and in the clarity of my thoughts. There's something about the regular rhythm of walking, the mobility of it and the fluidness of it, but also the pace that's different from running, or even cycling is different actually. Something about walking that allows the clutter to disappear and the thoughts to settle. And I sort of sat at one point and wrote that all down and just thought, actually walking is a really important part of creativity and being creative, and I would really like to work on a piece of work that invites its audience to take an hour to go for a walk. And at its most basic level, that's what Walking Stories does. It lasts for an hour. People are in a park. They are invited to spend that time in that green space. And for a lot of that time, they're walking. So whether or not it's a process where they actually have this space to have their own meander and their own set of thoughts, because we are coming into their world quite a bit, it touches on some of that premise that I'm interested in. And so yeah, there's so many different layers of what the work offers or potentially offers and what it contains.
Yeah, I think it does something more though, because I think it kind of choreographs a landscape for you by employing your imagination and by tapping into your own desires in a way. So there's an intensity to it which you don't get from just going for a walk in Greenwich Park, and I know because I live around here, I've done it many, many, many times, you know, but it delivers an opportunity for that sort of intensity that you often get from phenomenal landscapes. And I don't mean that as a way to justify the project. I think it's a real truth. You don't necessarily trip over those experiences by going for a walk, but actually to be brought together as a group of people and being given those invitations and suggestions and directions. The choreography of that moving through a park or a green space kind of choreographs the way you think as well, and the way you meet people. And it's the choreography of that thinking that I think is really powerful, because in just an hour you can go to places that, you know, metaphorically are huge distances apart. And normally that would take me a couple of days walking in the mountains to get there, and I think that's what it does, and I think that's where the choreography of it becomes really significant for me.
One of the things that we're kind of aware of is how intrusive the outside world is, so I'm just intrigued, is there a way during the performances where the participants actually listen to their surroundings as they are, or are they sort of taken away? I mean, there's always this thing when you're talking about site-specific work, you know, whether it's going to be something that is linked directly to that specific place, and whether that place then impinges on the work or on your experience of it.
Because quite a few of the residencies that we had were close to places where the work is being performed, we were able to take field recordings from Greenwich Park and from various of the other places that that the work was made in and is also going to be shown in. And so... And they're in the walk. So there's moments within the audio which have Greenwich Park, and I think that creates exactly this ambiguity of like, was that or wasn't that. I think in terms of response from people, there is an interesting thing about these earphones. So we deliberated about whether any instruction would be about removing them or not, but then how do you know when to put them back on? And in the end, we decided not to have that. So people have them on the whole time. I guess they have the choice to take them off if they want. I know that some people have been curious to take them off, but no one has yet. So whether that will happen or not, who knows? What I know of the headphones is that they do sort of, they do separate you from other people. You're in a bubble, and that allows you to enter your own world, but it also gives people, I think, a lot of license to do things that if they didn't have them on, they would feel silly doing. Somehow it really absorbs people, and they don't notice if other members of general public are watching them. They mostly really don't. It kind of takes them in. So it's quite interesting. They're there as a cushion. They're there to make people feel secure and confident and safe. They also create a bubble which sometimes can feel like separation. So there's this funny thing, because we're walking as a community, but and you're with strangers, but you don't ever talk to them. You spend an hour with them, and you don't know if they are listening to exactly what you're listening to or not. Sometimes it seems that they are, other times maybe it seems that they're not, and you're trying to figure those things out. So some of the feedback that we've had from audiences, well, quite a lot is about community actually. Often they feel like they've got to know this group of people, and they feel close to them even though they haven't spoken, and that's quite interesting. And at the end, some people want to really be on their own and be in the park for a long time or in the place, and they don't really want to move away from that. And other people want to talk a lot about their experience. Did you hear this? Did you get that? This is what I thought. How was that for you? They really want to talk because it happened to them. They did it. They participated. They made it. They also watched it and spectated it, because they are all of those things at the same time. And that's what's really different for me between this walk and going to a theatre and watching a dance piece where the audience sit and spectate it. Walking inherently is something you participate in, and this is many added layers above that in terms of participation. But you also spectate, because there's moments when you're really invited to watch and to be still and to notice and to see both the other people that you're with and also the space that you're in. And for me, this is a really interesting thing about where you place the line between audience and performer, or where's the performance, or is it a performance, and who's spectating it anyway, and how active are we in that spectating? And interestingly, kind of we who are performers take ourselves away from it and give it for you to do.
Perhaps I should ask you whether you're really walkers or cyclists, but are you a bit of both, really?
Yeah, both, definitely.
So perhaps you'd like to recommend a cycle ride.
Just take your bike for a walk.
Yeah.
That's what I'd say.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities in London. In this episode, you've heard from Charlotte Spencer Projects. Soon after recording the interview, I signed up to participate in Walking Stories. It was an extraordinary experience in which one wasn't sure whether those people around you, not wearing headphones, were actors on a staged event or just curious onlookers. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we would love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the Talking Walking website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited. Our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of Easytronic.